My Word. A panel game devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason. Dennis Farn and Frank Muir challenge Anne Scott James and Dennis Norton in a game about words, with Jack Longland in the chair.
And we go straight into the first round, which tests their vocabularies, and 2 marks if they get the meaning of the following words roughly right. Beginning with Dennis Norton. And Dennis, your word is perjink. P-E-R-J-I-N-K. It can be perjinkity.
I'm glad it can be perjinkity. Well, when I had a brief but checkered spell at the BBC as a sort of executive, and if you went away on BBC business, they told you something which I'd never known before. You get what they call a per diem, which is expenses so much per day, you see. And they talked, and I said, well, what about what I spend at night? Because we went to Paris, and, you know, that's where it is. And they didn't know how to answer this. And it occurred to me that if you're going away anywhere, which involves hijinks, as well as a per diem per day, you want a per jink per night.
I don't think Scottish elders would approve of that one, Dennis, and this is very much more an adjective which describes them.
Oh, it's an adjective. The verb is a doing word. I really haven't the faintest idea of what Scottish elders do with a perjink.
It's very difficult indeed. It's a Scottish adjective apparently still used, if not common, I don't know, in Scotland. It means prim, precise, or thoroughly pernickety, and nobody knows in the world how it comes to have that meaning. So it is a difficult word. Sorry. Now, Dennis Farn, it's your turn, and your word is farouche, F-A-R-O-U-C-H-E.
Well, I think that's a French word originally.
Yes.
And it's it applies to somebody with rather standoffish and savage manners. It's a bit wild and unwelcoming and savage.
Yes.
A good word, isn't it?
It's a good word, yes.
There's another word like that, louche.
Louche. Much more difficult. You missed out a wonderful bit, Dennis, and it can mean ill at ease and shy, as well as this overturn that there's, in this manner of behaviour, something that propels you. But it could be somebody who just is so countrified that he or she daren't appear in town society. That's the other little bit in the word farouche. Socially inexperienced.
I'll note that down, thank you.
They're a strange couple. He's farouche and she's louche.
I don't mean to make the charts. Frank, no, it's your turn. A perdonium.
In the White House, there's a sort of rather large room with about 5 busy corridors debouching from it, and aides to the president keep rushing in and bumping into each other and saying, pardon me, pardon me. And that's called the perdonium. It's a metal. It's one of those rare, very, very rare metals for plating astronauts' zip fasteners.
If you bumped into this one, you'd find it harder to tend your fire.
Bellows. It's a harmonium. Perdonium is a harmonium which reproduces not notes of music, but cat's purrs. Perdonium. If you bump into it, it hurts.
I'm going to give you one for effrontery. If you are an old-fashioned auctioneer, which I don't think you are, and particularly if you're a Victorian old-fashioned auctioneer, which you certainly are not, you would use this as, when you were selling it, a euphemism for a particular kind of coal scuttle, which was invented by a Mr. Purdom. Difficult.
Alfred Lord. I wouldn't say that.
Alfred Lord Tennyson's sister fell into a coal scuttle when she was a baby.
Well, that's it. That's absolutely... It would be a perdonium, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know whether she fell into a perdonium, but she fell into a coal scuttle.
When she had too many jinkies.
Now, Anne Scott James, yours is a grummet, G-R-U-M-M-E-T, or it can be a grummet as well.
I think it's an agricultural word. It's the sort of grumbling old midget you find in a village and sometimes gets stuck in the pond.
I think you better take a cruise on luxury liner. Would that help you, Anne?
Ah, yes, yes. The sort of games people play at sea.
Yes.
Such as two people in a single cabin.
Don't even go into that. But on deck.
Oh, that ghastly boring game with which people used when I was young, and people still went by sea to while away the time. Something to do with deck quoit.
Yes, that's right. It's a ring made of twisted rope, and therefore those funny quoits you throw in, deck quoits, are the same thing. Or it can be a hole edged with rope, a metal ring lining an eyelet, the eyelet itself, and all sorts of other things. One half. Well, now, before we go on to the next round, here are the quotations that you've been given for the last round of all, and Dennis Norden, yours is, "See what the boys in the back room will have." And yours, Frank, is, "If music be the food of love, play on." And the second round is about something in common. So for 2 marks, what do the following words or names or phrases have in common? Dennis Norden, yours are endover, bunny hop, goofy foot, and tick-tacking.
They're not all members of a guide patrol.
They were called Akela or something.
Bunny bop and goofy foot. I'm sure I've seen those around. Endover?
Bunny hop.
Andover,
I think. Perhaps they all occur...
I thought Andover
in
should be.
Down. Do they all occur in Watership
Down?
Down,
yeah.
Are they? No, they're not nice gooey enough. No. They're not gooey enough for that. Goofy foot and tick-tacking. And an enormous rash of fractures and casualties in the hospitals over the last 6 months or a year.
Are they terms used in mugging?
Mugging. This is a sport.
An old lady, if you get an old
oh,
lady.
Oh, it's a terrible skateboard.
Skateboard.
Thing,
oh,
it?
Skateboard, yes.
So dangerous. Poor old ladies getting bowled over right, left, and center.
Well, they're not supposed to do it, yes. old lady's supposed to have chauffeur-driven skateboards.
Well, leaving these terrible skateboarding old ladies out and thinking of skateboarding generally, that's the right answer. A little help, but I think you deserve your 2 marks. Lewis Powell, Dr. Primrose, St. John Rivers, William Collins, and Tartuffe. They're all male. That's not the common link that I want. They have something else in common.
They're all fictional characters,
mm-hmm.
to begin with. I think they're all religious, and they come out of, most of them come out of novels. Tartuffe comes out of a play by Molière. And Tartuffe did pretend to religious morality,
that's right.
Which he didn't feel.
That's right.
William
Pride
Collins is Pride and Prejudice.
Quite right.
Pride
yes.
and Prejudice, who really...
He was a pompous ass.
He's a pompous
ass. Yeah. And yes, so that he wasn't quite a hypocrite, but yes. He was a pompous ass and a snob.
In reverse is Bronte, I think, isn't it?
That's right. Jane Eyre.
Jane Eyre.
Yes, so you well deserved 2 marks. These were all literary, either clergymen or men of religion, either genuine, like Dr. Primrose and St. John Rivers, or bogus, like Tartuffe. And that's what brings them together into this sort of little assembly. 2 marks. Frank Miller, the way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent upon a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a maid. What have they got in common?
They all proceed in a devious manner?
I don't know.
What do they do?
It's biblical. They start from the Bible.
That's right. It's biblical. It comes from the Bible.
From the Bible.
Give you a bit. It comes from the book of Proverbs.
It comes from the book of Proverbs. Well, they all come from the book of Proverbs, Jack. Mm.
Yes,
from the Bible.
They do.
They all proceed in a devious manner towards their objective.
One mark.
These are all things which the author of the book of Proverbs, or the authors, said were too wonderful for him, her, or it. There be three things that are too wonderful for me, yea, four, which I know not: the way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent upon a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a maid. He was being modest, I think. One more. Now it's Anne Scott James. Saxophone, es Schultzia, Pinchbeck, and Tasmania.
Well, a Scotia is a flower.
Yes.
It's Polish, too. All named after somebody?
Yeah,
it's culture. Well, most flowers are named after somebody, aren't they? So it must have been named after somebody called Eschscholtz or something.
Yes, absolutely right. They put a von in front of it. Von Eschscholtz.
Oh, yes.
And he went on expedition in 1821 and discovered the California poppy.
Tasman.
Yes.
Pinchbeck after somebody called Pinchbeck, presumably.
What did he do?
Was he a forger, I wonder?
In fact,
it's quite a nice thing, Pinchbeck, but it's not real gold. It's a sort of...
That's right. That's what he was trying to do. He was trying
to create gold.
Pass it off as though it were gold.
And a saxophone is a delightful instrument, which you don't hear enough of these days. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, yeah.
Invented by?
Well, presumably somebody called Sax.
Adolf.
It certainly wasn't Adolf Sax.
Yes.
We're trying to keep Sax out of this program.
you fight your way through towards your two marks. These are all, as they say, eponymous, named after their inventors or discoverers. Adolf Sax invented, I think, the sax horn as well as the saxophone. Von Eschscholtz discovered, only he didn't invent it, he found this Eschscholtz here, which I think is a kind of Californian poppy, if I remember rightly, Anne. And Christopher Pinchbeck was a watchmaker who made an alloy of copper with a little zinc, which stood out brilliantly like gold. And Abel Tasman discovered Tasmania and various other things too. Two marks. Now, the next round is a round of recorded poetry, and this is a team round, so that the people in each team can collaborate together openly rather than doing it covertly, which they've been doing up to now. Two marks, if you can tell me, who is the poet, and what was the poem of which the following is an excerpt? And we start with Dennis and Anne, and your bit is being read by Sir Ralph Richardson.
Whether the summer clothes the general earth with greenness, or the redbreast sit and sing betwixt the tufts of snow on the bare branch of mossy apple tree, while the nigh thatch smokes in the sun thaw. Whether the eavesdrops fall, heard only in the trances of the blast, or if the secret ministry of frost shall hang them up in silent icicles, quietly shining to the quiet moon.
I can only try Browning or Tennyson.
No, it's earlier than that.
Coleridge or Wordsworth?
Yes.
Coleridge, let's try that.
Coleridge it is. And think of this being a wintry poem. Can you remember the title?
I can only think of Keats and Agnes Eve. It's not that.
No, it's earlier. No, you've got Coleridge. Coleridge is right.
Coleridge.
Yes, quite right.
We don't know it, Jack.
It's Coleridge's Frost at Midnight. One hop. Now, Frank and Dillis, your excerpt also is being read by Sir Ralph Richardson.
Who hath not seen thee oft amid thy stall? Sometimes whoever seeks abroad may find thee sitting careless on a granary floor, thy hair soft lifted by the winnowing wind, or on a half-reaped furrow sound asleep, drowse with the fumes of poppies, while thy hook spares the next swath and all its twined flowers.
It was very romantic.
Very romantic. Yes,
we think it might be Keats.
Keats. Name of the poem. This is not awfully difficult to deduce from what's...
Keats owed something.
It's very...
Half-reaped furrow.
But it's their nature, isn't it?
It's Ode to Autumn.
That's right.
Ode to Autumn. Oh, season
Autumn.
Of mist.
Ode to Autumn.
And mellow fruitfulness.
That's right. Keats's Ode to Autumn and two marks. And now a quick round on words beginning with the letter P for pudding. So for two marks, what word beginning with the letter P can be defined in these ways? Dennis Norton, of, containing, connected with, or acting by means of, wind or air.
Beginning with P.
Yeah.
Pan American Airways. Pneumatic.
That's right. Pneumatic. Yes, two marks. Dennis Fowle, I'm beginning with P again, an insubstantial apparition.
Phantom.
Phantom is right. Two marks. Frank Miller, a
pneumonia.
Song.
Pneumonia.
Frank Miller, yours is a song, chant, or anthem of a sacred nature.
Psalm.
Yes, two marks. Psalm it is. And Scott James, a kind of grouse.
Ptarmigan.
Quite right. Two marks. So now we come to the last round and to Dennis and Frank's quotations, and the marks will be awarded on the length of the applause from the audience in the theatre. Dennis, your quotation is, see what the boys in the back room will have. Dennis.
Well, most people are aware that Johann Sebastian Bach wrote more than 1,000 musical compositions, but what I found out only quite recently was that he also produced no less than 20 children. Mm-hmm. Now, I must say, that increased my respect for him no end. You see, as a bit of a creative artist myself, I know what it's like trying to produce work of an enduring nature with, in my case, just two kids hitting each other in the next room, but to have churned out all those immortal toccatas and capriccios and things with 20 of them belting each other about, that really does take some doing, because you take the naming of all those children. I mean, just from my two, I know just how many working hours are completely lost going through that dictionary of Christian names, that the trauma of all that, you know. Edwin means happy conqueror. Yes, yes, but Robert means famous in council, you know. Well, whole days get wasted on that. So what it must have been like for a man who not only had 20 of them to label, but also had a mass in B-flat minor to get done by Christmas. My guess is that after about the 11th kid, he just started naming them from the yellow pages. Nevertheless, what you have to ask yourself is, how did a man who probably had to spend as much per week on Smarties as the rest of us do in a decade, where did he get the wherewithal to just stay at home knocking out fugues and motets and the odd Magnificat? Well, admittedly, he must have done very well from the social services. It must still have been a financial strain. So how did he cope? Well, that's where the history books help, because according to the official biographies, what this one-man population explosion did was he gave all his children musical training, and he sort of hired them out to the local gentry as personal organists or kapellmeisters or concertmasters in ordinary. You see, he had his head screwed on, old Johann Sebastian, so he realized that having now got that big smash hit, the Brandenburg Concerto, behind him, he knew that for any one of the local dukes or princelings to install his own personal young Bach in the drawing room, it's sort of as a status symbol, it modestly 18th century equivalent of having an 8-track stereo of your own. See, so when, on the day that the Elector of Saxony called round and said, look, I'm just about to move into my new Schloss, and have you got a spare young Bach I could hire as family music tutor, Johann Sebastian could afford to be a bit sort of cavalier about it. He said, I'm sorry, I think they're all spoken for now. So the Elector said, well, do you happen to have another one on the way? And Johann said, well, I couldn't really say. I haven't been home since this morning. the Elector was so disappointed, he said, let me put this to you then. He said, whatever the Duke of Bavaria is offering you, I'm prepared to up the price. And Johann said, ah, now you're beginning to talk my language. So the Elector said, I'll tell you what, why not let me take all of you out to lunch on Thursday? Then my wife can pick out one of the kids, the one that would go best with the new curtains. So next Thursday, there they all were in the restaurant, and the elector said, right, then, you know, what would everybody like to drink? And Mrs. Bach said, nothing for me, thanks. Not in my condition. Johann Sverre said, oh, Himmel, he said, oh, I make money double scotch. And the elector said, well, what about the kids? At which four of the children said that they'd have lemonade, five asked for a fizzy orange, three opted for apple juice, six for blackcurrant cordial, and Carl Philippe, who was the precocious one, he said, make mine a daiquiri. Now, the waiter totted that lot up and said, I'm sorry, sir, but that only makes 19 drinks for the children. There's one, Johann called the roll, and sure enough, one was missing, little Wilhelm Dry Cleaner. That was the one that they did pick out from the Yellow Pages. And he said, where's Willie gone? And all the other kids said, oh, Dad, you know where he's gone, which is always the case, isn't it? I mean, when you take a whole bunch of kids to a restaurant at any given moment, there's always one who has to scoot for the doings, you see. So Johann said to the electors, shall we wait till he comes back? And the elector said, no, I've got a better idea. Whereupon he turned to the waiter, and he uttered the line which has resounded ever since through musical history. See what the Bach in the boys' room will have.
Great complaints from West Germany, but we'll go on to Frank Muir, and his storyline was, if music be the food of love, play on, which is the Duke's first lines in Twelfth Night.
Tony Shryan said that to me. He didn't say it to me, actually, he said it to Jack Longland. Tony Shryan, who is probably one of the finest radio producers the BBC or this country has ever had, and I say that with the full confidence that whatever cuts are made in when this program is edited, that line will stay in. these programs are edited, you know, so if we thump the table or burst into a paroxysm of coughing, Tony chops it out again. Which reminds me that some time ago, my wife and I were celebrating our wedding anniversary, and we got a bit maudlin, you know, late in the evening. And we said, what is it that I do that irritates you? And she said, it's your body noises. Food has a funny effect on me. If there's anything exotic or any strange combination of food, I get these sort of huge hiccups. You know, there's a great galvanic twitch of the body, and combs and ballpoint pens leap out of the inside pocket, and the cufflinks snap. It's sort of... And not only strange food, not only strange combinations, but I mean, if we go out to dinner party and the hostess says, I've got a lovely thing I think you'll enjoy. It's slices of avocado with ginger and marmalade. And my wife goes, white. Two spoonfuls in. There's another thing, though. There's another sort of hiccup I get from fluff. I mean, things like emptying the vacuum cleaner bag. Absolute death. And the sneezes from little flakes of material floating around in the air are quite different. The hiccups go together in a batch, in a bunch. It's sort of... It's rather like a monster bull walrus with his fin caught. Well, now, normally speaking, before coming on a program like this, I eschew all strange combinations of food. I have, and all materials which could give off fluff. I have a couple of boiled eggs and homemade bread for lunch. And I'm hiccup-free, and Dillis usually wears beautiful silk dresses. So there's none of the honking sort of hiccup. But the other week, something went wrong. I was very hungry and I arrived, and the little Japanese man was going. And Anne also is hungry before the show, and she usually brings sandwiches. And she had these lovely sort of chives and cucumber and little bits of raw onion sandwiches, and they were absolutely delightful. But of course, about 3 minutes into the programme, and Jack luckily just didn't pay any attention. I stuffed myself in the hole under the desk and put the handkerchief in my mouth and passed it off. But in the second half of the programme, Dennis felt hot, took her jacket off, and she had a powder blue angora top. So it went. Oh. So Jack stopped the show, quite rightly, until I'd recovered. But Tony Schreien came up to him afterwards and said, Jack, you shouldn't have stopped the show. This is a recording. I can edit those things out. You know, just carry on. But Jack said, do you mean if he's eaten something strange, or even if there's wafts of little fluffs of material coming across? And Tony Schreien said, yes, yes. And then he said this marvellous line of Shakespeare's. He said, if Muir's hick be the food or fluff, play on.
And by your vote, ladies and gentlemen, nevertheless, Dennis Norden wins the story, and he and Anne Scott James also win this week's entire contest.
Taking part in My Word were Anne Scott James, Dillis Powell, Dennis Norden, and Frank Muir. The chairman was Jack Lockhart. The questions were compiled by Peter Moore, and the program was produced by Tony Schreien.
You've been listening to My Word from the BBC, heard each week at this time. This is the WFMT Fine Arts Network.